conference. Chris, we're ready.
Yeah, he's recusing himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we're ready.
Okay, Bernadette, we're on item C. Presentation of the staff report.
Thank you. This is Bernadette Susan, Associate Planner. FMZ LLC proposes to rescind the property that they recently purchased from an existing Williamson F contract, which currently has two different property owners, and create a contract consisting solely of property under their ownership. The project site is located north of the city of Montague. They propose to continue the commercial ag use of livestock raising. Staff recommends amending the existing ag preserve to remove this property, rescind the subject property from the existing contract, and create an individual ag preserve and corresponding contract consisting of only MMC property. Staff also recommends determining this project exempt from CEQA, pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15317, open space easements or contracts, and adopt resolutions approving the rescission and the applicant's property and re-entry of the new Williamson Act contract and amendment to the act reserve. Thank you.
Any correspondence, Wendy?
No correspondence.
Proponents or opponents?
None online.
Public comment?
None online.
No rebuttals then. Do we close the hearing or is this?
We can close, yes.
Close the hearing. Board member discussion? I'm just going to stay here for a minute, don't worry.
No discussion. Are you looking for a motion?
I am looking for a motion.
Approve.
Second.
That was Kopseff and Okren, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Get ready. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Okren?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure. Item D, heard of that?
This goes with the second here. There's two pages each. Actually, you can count better than I can.
I did have an extra.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. This is Bernadette Sisson. This is Associate Planner again. We're here for back with the Wildlands Conservancy Ag Preserve Amendment and then SNAP contract. At the board meeting on August 1st, we brought this before the board. The board asked staff to get some more information. So I'm back with that information today with the assistance of the Wildlands Conservancy Group, who is the property owner. They responded to the request for information regarding the hunting club that was mentioned to be on the property. As Landon Papel indicated at the meeting, there that does no longer exist on the property, and staff has informed the property owners that should they take that into consideration to have it on the property again, they would need to propose that to the Ag Preserve Administrator for review and approval. Water rights and usage. The applicant addressed this in a letter to the board. Planning staff does not assess water usage as part of the evaluation if the property is eligible for a Williamson contract. The legitimacy of the commercial ag use on the property. Staff verified with the Hayden Ranch that they utilized the property, and we were unable to contact the renters, Nash. They had some personal family things going on, so we did not get hold of them. But the property owner also owns commercial cattle. And then again, the property owner addressed the question regarding tax rates and the use of that tax savings on the property in the letter. So upon review by staff of the entire project, we found that they do qualify for Williamson Act contract. Initially, there was a parcel described as an eligible parcel B in the first staff report that said that the entire property was not under ag preserve, and it was in fact found that it is. There had been some rebooking of parcel numbers, which caused some confusion there, but we did find that the entire parcel does qualify. Additionally, the parcel described as an eligible parcel C could qualify should the board consider the addition of 15.5 acres that was previously not within ag preserve to not be a significant increase. We calculate that to be approximately 0.02 of the legal parcel size. And so staff is recommending the board approve the resolution to amend the existing ag preserve to remove the property, establish a new ag preserve that consists solely of Wildlands Conservancy property with the addition of the 15.5 acres that was not previously encumbered, adopt the resolution approving the rescission of the subject property from the existing contracts and renew into a new Williams Mack contract that also includes the 15.5 acres, and determine the project exempt from CEQA in accordance with CEQA section 15317, open space easements or contracts. We would also suggest the board direct staff to bring back a recommendation for non-renewal of any of the remaining substandard or portion parcels no later than September 2024, giving the property owner time to apply for boundary line adjustment. Thank you.
Okay, any correspondence, Wendy?
No correspondence for this one.
So no, okay, so opponents, opponents?
One moment, we do have one.
Battery 90%.
Landon Peppel, you should be able to unmute.
Thank you. Can folks hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Good morning, Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. My name is Landon Peppel, Deputy Director at the Wildlands Conservancy. My apologies, I can't be in person again today. Since our last meeting in August, we've engaged with the county planning staff to provide supplemental information we hope will satisfy the inquiry into the agricultural values of the property. We thank Bernadette and her team for the detailed and technical approach and the extensive due diligence. It's really commendable. Thank you, Ms. Bernadette. The Wildlands Conservancy supports the recommendation found within the supplemental staff report. Furthermore, want to highlight the second paragraph of the additional findings as a noteworthy item and a relatively simplified pathway to extend our eligibility for another 600 plus acres. I'm here to help answer any further questions and just appreciate the staff's consideration of this item. Thank you.
Okay, move on to public comment.
Seeing none online.
Close the hearing again, Wendy?
Yes, this should be closed. We took care of it last time. I believe we're good.
Okay, board members, questions, discussion, motion?
Question. So with regard to the letter that they sent in on August 18th under water rights, the preserve was acquired utilizing funds from the California Wildlife Conservation Board's Stream Flow Enhancement Program. As part of that funding, the Conservancy committed to leaving 50% of the water rights in stream for salmon benefit. They go on to say that our research and improvements to the water system's efficiency, similar to the Hayden's family approach in the past, aims, and I'm going to underscore, aims to maintain or increase agriculture production from historical levels with the water that is available. I'm concerned about that. And it's going to go back to a presentation we heard earlier today. There's this math formula out there that just says give up more water for fish without taking into consideration dewatering the whole watershed entirely. So I'm not sure how they're going to be able to maintain the current level of agriculture with giving up 50% of their water.
The staff evaluates this on use.
So the use that they're proposing is livestock grazing of the entire property. We do not utilize water irrigation in any of our determining if it qualifies unless we are looking at soils. So some soils can be evaluated as a class 3 or 4, but if they're irrigated, it can move it into a more desirable class. That's the only time we use it, and that's to determine if it qualifies for an ag preserve. So this property, based on that, even if it wasn't irrigated, still qualifies. So that would be staff's evaluation of any water use.
Okay.
So I share the same concerns. And I share them primarily because of our experience with the TNC property. We're headed down the same path for this property. This property is key to the flows in the Scott River and the irrigation that always took place there that replenished the headland wetlands was critical to the flows in the Scott. Hydrologically, I don't see that it's possible with 50% of the water being dedicated to in-stream versus the historic use of this ranch. Coupled with that, in your staff report, we talked about the hunting lease. I didn't see anywhere where someone actually verified that they have been canceled. I see a process to go forward to maybe get them approved. But the question I ask is, was that a reoccurring use, and is it compatible with the Williamson Act?
We would not have record of when it occurred previously. It's not something that is requested from property owners when we survey them. So we don't have a record of if that has occurred on the property. And as with how we acquired information as far as what uses are existing on the property, it's by what the property owner tells us. They sign a survey, they let us know what they're doing with the property, and we take their word for it unless there's some sort of complaint that comes through code enforcement, and code enforcement does verification on it, or something like that. But we normally do not require documentation from them.
If you're asking me to make a decision on compatibility moving forward based on historic practice, I know that it existed.
I'm trying to find where we would be able to, but normally, as staff requesting additional information for a project where we don't normally ask for this, it's just not something we normally just ask the property owner, and they tell us, yes, we have, 300 head cows, and we say, okay. We ask them if there's a residence and who lives in it, and they tell us it's a renter, and we say, okay. And we include that in the report. So when they say they don't have that occurring, we take that report.
I understand. And I also understand that previously we looked at a sawmill operation on the Williamson Act property in East County, where you brought to us that was a non-conforming use. And it was associated with a code complaint. I know that. Similar situation to me in that a portion of this property has RVs on it during hunting season for dispersed camping associated with hunting leases. It seems to me that's not a compatible use of the Williamson Act.
No, and we did inform the property owner should they want to do that, or again, they need to submit that through the Ag Preserve Administrator for review and approval. That would not be considered a compatible use in the county guidelines. By right, they would need to request that.
Okay. Somebody wrote anything?
I've already had my questions answered.
Okay.
Thank you.
Board's wishes. To move this along, I'll make the recommended motion. Seeing that it's going nowhere, I guess it's going to die. And go to wherever those things go. Thank you, Bernadette.
So does that mean it's denied?
Hmm?
Does that mean this is denied?
I didn't see a second. County Council? That's the right path, right? Motion. Motion dies for lack of a second.
It was not approved. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on. Talk about vacation rentals. Okay, presentation of the staff report.
Good morning, Haley Lane, Planning Director. One thing I wanted to note before kicking off my presentation is it was communicated to our office that Supervisor Chris is allowed to participate in the vacation rental piece per the FPCC, but due to his involvement with Williamson Act, County Council has provided us with a recommended process on how to go about it should the board...
Natalie Reed, County Council. Supervisor Chris has an ownership interest in Williamson Act properties that prohibit him from participating in Williamson Act discussions. And so because of this, and because of the possibility that a ban on vacation rentals for Williamson Act contract properties exists within this vacation rental discussion, Supervisor Chris has been recusing himself from the discussion. Recently, he received informal advice from the FPPC, and that advice was that you could enable Supervisor Chris to participate in these discussions if the planning department would essentially put the vacation rental ordinance on hold for now and first deal with the drafting and adoption of a Williamson Act property section that addresses any prohibition you intend to adopt. And so Supervisor Chris would not participate in that discussion. And after the board adopts that prohibition section, if you so choose, then the issue would have been segmented and a final decision rendered, and then Supervisor Chris would be allowed to participate in the discussions on the vacation rentals so long as the remaining decisions he participated in did not reopen discussions on any prohibition for Williamson Act properties. So essentially, a decision needs to be made at this juncture whether the board desires to put the vacation rental discussion on hold and deal with the segmented issue of Williamson Act properties so that Supervisor Chris can participate or not.
Did you get that?
I got it. Okay. And FPC has been great to work with. Just so you guys know, I said it a long time before, so I'd be prepared for it. And they answered the vacation rental part perfect, and then the Williamson Act kind of came up later. How it would be, not talking pro or con, but how it would be inserted into this vacation rental stuff. And so I sought further advice, and they said if it's involved in it, then that should not be involved. So pros and cons with anything, but only the lead option on this.
So, quick question though, I mean, he's recused himself in the past, so to bring him in now, we'll take the Williamson Act discussion off the table. How do you be a decision maker when we've been through several meetings on this already? Are we going to start from scratch altogether?
I mean, it depends on how planning approaches it, you know. Putting it on hold, I don't know when they come back, which could be after the new year, in what form or it will come back.
Right. So timeline-wise, with updating the Williamson Act guidelines, obviously there's staff time associated with that, and we would honestly be taking this opportunity to update some other elements within the guidelines since our last iteration. And then with the first and second reading, realistically, we're a few months out of then having that item before the board. Would be closer, in 2-3 months or something like that, and then there would be a first and second reading. And then after that, we would come back probably where we left off and continue the conversation with vacation rentals. With the vacation rental piece, I feel like we're getting fairly close to tying things up and then having staff ready to come back with an actual full-fledged zoning ordinance. But of course, it's up to the board direction.
So my interpretation would be, Supervisor Chris, that's the decision would be on his end of it. I think I would continue to move forward with what the discussion is, and we work accordingly. Anyone in disagreement with that?
Yeah, I don't want to lose ground.
No,
I mean,
it is.
Okay.
So that sounds like you will not be segmenting the Williamson Act piece, and you would like to just proceed with discussions, in which case Supervisor Chris.
I'll be recusing me. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And I would see that on the ROSAP, but not the, this is the vacation round, right?
Mm-hmm.
So no. In regards to, they're not two separate ones. Under the vacation rental ordinance,
there's
a discussion there, so that's why they were segmenting that out.
Okay.
There. So,
okay. Yeah.
Really, not to me on that. I mean, I do have to
recuse
myself. Yeah.
That's fine. We're just continuing on the path. Then.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Okay.
That works.
Right.
Continue.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
And so, for the record, Supervisor Chris will not be recusing himself. Okay.
Great. So, again, Haley Lane, Planning Director, Vacation Rental Policies. So, during our last meeting, which was July 11th, related to this item, we had a primary focus of the conversation was workflow. How is this going to look from application start to finish? Who's going to be the approval authority and things like that? And a big part of that discussion was related to public engagement and public noticing, and how within our process is the public going to be notified of a upcoming vacation rental within their area. And so staff reworked the workflow, and so the options we're providing right now, similar to before, is the owner would come in with a vacation rental application. If they meet all of the requirements outlined in the application guidance, then staff would accept the application, send out notice of the potential vacation rental to the neighboring properties within 300 feet. If 50% or more of the notice residents submit a protest letter, so a letter of opposition, what we're saying currently is that then that application would come to the board for decision of approval and denial. And it has to come to the board because Planning Commission deals solely with land use entitlements. So it would be heard with the board for approval and denial. Or option two would be someone applies, same process, we receive the application, it's accepting it as full, and then we send out the notice to the neighboring residents. If we don't receive any protest letter, then staff would analyze it and then approve or deny based on what is required within the application checklist. And so I wanted that to be a focus of our conversation today, to see how the board feels about that process, primarily with this protest piece of if 50% or more of the residents oppose the letter. Would you like that to be heard at the board level, or would that be a flat-out denial? A few other items. I know it was the wish of the board to bring back the 2.5-acre minimum in the McLeod region, so staff is recommending if that is going to happen, not have a cap on permits, because with the 2.5-acre minimum requirement, that takes out a lot of the housing stock within the McLeod area, so there wouldn't be too many properties that would go above that. So it would either be an either-or situation. So keep the 2.5 or have a cap. Both would be, I think, too restrictive for that area. Let's see, one last thing. Use permits of previously approved vacation rentals. I know we've briefly talked about grandfathering those in some sort of like amortization process, or is it the wish of the board to maybe just have the use permit stand, right? So we could just have those be grandfathered into the process, and then since those folks went through the use permit process and Planning Commission and all of that, and that is a land use entitlement, we just wouldn't be taking that away. As long as they're operating under their conditions of approval, they would still stand with that permit. One other thing I wanted to note is that we have been discussing that two-year residency requirement related to the home ownership exemption, and there is a recent case law out of City of Lake Tahoe where the decision of that case was that it's actually unconstitutional to require that. And so we were modeling that requirement out of the Tahoe area. I think I pulled that from the City of Truckee in Nevada County. And so I just wanted to make that known. And so at this juncture, I'm recommending we do away with that requirement based on the recent case law, because I would assume something similar would happen up here. And so that concludes my comments, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any correspondence on this, Wendy?
No correspondence.
I don't see any proponents or opponents on this subject. Any public comment?
none online.
Amazing. Well, this is, you know, for a lot of people, such a big thing. You would think that there would be more participation on this. We're going to keep, we won't close the hearing, right? We're going to continue this?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So let's start with the first, walk down your list and we'll have the discussion.
Sure. So going back to the workflow piece, what we have currently right now is if 50% or more of residents submit a letter of opposition, it would come to the board as a hearing for an approval or denial of that permit. And so staff's thoughts is, you know, the board would function as determining the validity of those protest letters. There may be a situation where, you know, folks use it to potentially maybe weaponize if they don't like vacation rentals or not, because we're not going to, you know, staff, where we shouldn't be determining the validity of it, right, because then that takes it to a discretionary process. Or is it the wish of the board to say, hey, you know what, let's just streamline this. If there's 50% or more, let's just deny it, it doesn't move forward. So I wanted a discussion related to that workflow.
Board's thoughts?
Just a clarifying question. 50% of?
Of the noticed residents. So we typically have a 300-foot buffer, right? So it would be, so, you know, if there's a project in Aetna and someone comments from, you know, Doris.
That wouldn't allow, like, form letters and.
Correct. Correct. So it would just be the noticed residents, so the ones that are affected by the vacation rental.
Okay. Anyone else? So let's go.
So the original board resolution that never was codified way back when had that language. If the neighborhood didn't support it, it was denied.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an easier way of going about this than bringing it back to this board.
Okay.
If you have 50%, you know, of opposition to a project in the neighborhood, since it's residential anyway, to me that says it's not going to happen. And it basically, it would cost $1,000 for somebody to appeal it to this board, whoever they were, correct?
So, if there were 50% or more letters of opposition, it would that would be a part of the application process, is then it goes to the board. But then, yes, whatever your decision is, then the applicant or residents could appeal that decision.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the appeal process would still be there.
After the decision's made by the board, yes.
If the 50% opposition and community development denied it because of that, it could be appealable regardless?
Oh, correct. Yeah, it should.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I would leave it at that. Adding another layer of, if you have that, then bring it to the board, because who would you appeal to again? You know, because you've already been to the board.
Okay.
So I think I'd leave that in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that streamline it more?
Sure. So 50% or more denial, and then the applicant could wish to appeal, and then it would be heard at the
That's
board.
The normal process for anything else, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. I'd support that. That makes the most sense. And it also protects the residents, because why should they have to put up $1,000 to appeal something that they were in opposition to to begin with? So.
Okay.
Supervisor Ogre?
Are we strictly talking about option one here, not two? Or
I guess the appeal process would be the same for option two, right? So if there's no letters of opposition, but let's say they don't meet all of the requirements of the application, then it would be denied, and then an applicant could appeal that decision.
Well, I'm not a proponent of option two anyway. I like option one, so.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
I just wasn't sure if we were looking at both of them.
So I'm in favor of you handling the 50%. To come before the board, you know, I don't know the details that the other supervisors are wrestling with in their particular district, and I don't need to weigh in on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's more important that the local folks are about.
I think the only thing that concerns me is that I can see a lot of naysayers. That, you know, you only do, it doesn't take much to get 50%, and they say no, and you know, by right, you're just telling people they can't utilize their property. How many times have I heard that?
No. It's residential zoning.
No, I get
usually,
that.
So.
But we still talk about property rights in this county.
Mm-hmm.
And so But I think ultimately there is an appeal process, and so then we, you know, we can vet it out at that point.
Sure. Okay.
Next.
Great. Let's see here. So McLeod, 2.5 acre minimum. Are we good with just keeping that in place and then removing the cap? Because having both on that region would be too restrictive.
I think only 2.5 I'm worried about is the Mount Shasta. We're not changing.
And we're keeping that, and there's also a cap within that area as well.
Okay.
Grandfathering in of current use permits.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
how does that work? Because basically, if you have one now, is that permit perpetual now?
So with a land use entitlement, yes. So as long as you are keeping up with that use consecutively, you know, let's say you have an Airbnb, you've utilized it, you know, every year for 10 years, you have that entitlement, there's no issues, then it runs with the land and you can keep moving forward. And so, you know, my thoughts about it is folks have gone through the process, they've been vetted through the process. Most of them are good with their conditions of approval. We don't have issues with these longstanding ones. And so, you know, since they have gone through the process and have this land use entitlement, I would be okay with just keeping that in place. And then, you know, if those permits need to be revoked because there's no consecutive use or something like that, that can happen at that time. But since they've, you know, they're already operating under the land use entitlement, I think we should let them have that.
But where I'm getting to is, I guess, what would revoke one? Could it be complaint driven even on existing?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. So
yeah,
there is
that would be heard,
there's an off
commission
ramp that if it gets to be a bad operator, there's a way out of it. But it doesn't affect, for instance, if they sell the property, does the permit follow the sale of the property even if it was revoked?
So if it was revoked, no. But if it, you know, is acting in perpetuity and then the next property owner picks it up immediately and utilizes it, then yes. So, because that's how land use entitlements work.
Yes.
I'm not a fan of that.
I'm okay with it because there is a complaint. There is a process to eliminate it. If they're grandfathered in, they're probably good actors to begin with. There's a way for a bad actor to get thrown out of the system.
I don't think they have a choice, really, on the grandfathering.
But the new ones are not.
No.
Correct. That's
right.
Why their activity permits and
right,
they will be heard with
right
you all and not planning commission, so we're out of that land use entitlement
right
realm.
Okay.
And as long as
it's property owner to property owner.
Okay. And then with the old ones, if they're bad actors and we get complaints, then they can be revoked.
Yep, and then it would go to planning commission for revocation.
No comment.
As referred to the grandfathered in condition.
State your name there, big guy.
Sorry, you're right. Bill Carroll, Assistant County Counsel. For those that are grandfathered in, they're operating under the conditional use permits, and they violate a condition of their permits, then they can be revoked. If a complaint also indicates that would also equate to a violation of the permit, let's say the permit said no noise after 10 p.m. and they were. They can go to the Planning Commission and be revoked, but they're issued and revoked in accordance with what conditions are on the permits now. So just perhaps subjective complaints wouldn't necessarily be enough. For the CUPs, we would have to show the complaint involved a violation of the permit somewhere along the line, and it may well happen. But I just wanted to clarify that just complaining about the vacation rental would not be enough for the CUP.
Okay, Hanny, where are we?
Those were my three main issues I wanted to get worked out. I didn't know if you wanted to have any further discussion on the 2-year requirement piece.
For the live there?
Yeah, I would suggest remove it based on the
case law. Now, right?
Yeah, I agree.
But what about the inspection? Is 3 years too long? Or I guess we've talked about this, but and that's what we came up with. But is it? I mean, restaurants get inspected every year.
Mm-hmm.
Hotels get inspected several times a year. So, just question. You know.
Yeah, I mean, our office is good with the 3 year. There's, you know, with a problem vacation rental, you're going to hear about it before the 3-year cycle. You know, so
I'm assuming that the inspection is that they're meeting their requirements
all
for
the,
for public use, basically, just like any other hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Health and safety.
Yeah.
Health and
yeah.
safety requirements, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yes, yes.
We're good with it,
just one thought on that, since we're eliminating the 2-year
mm-hmm.
residence. Maybe this is too tricky, but could we do a 1-year inspection and then 3 years after that?
So like an initial one annual inspection and then thereafter 3 years.
Just to make sure they're performing correctly and then go every 3 years after that? We could?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay.
Okay, what else?
That's it. I think, you know, in terms of these high-level
okay.
you know, policies, we're in a good spot, and I think staff is ready to, you know, there is that draft layout that is attached to the staff report, which is, I think we're in a good spot to now start focusing on that and then bring that forward as a more fleshed-out zoning ordinance.
Okay. Continue on. Thank you.
We should continue it to a specific date.
Give it to me.
Okay. What are October dates?
One of those new electronic calendars.
You can go ahead and flip
it. Push a button.
Sorry.
Yeah, good luck with that thing.
I would say either the last October date or the first.
Last October date will be fine.
Okay.
Because typically our first meetings can be longer.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't want this ever to be perceived that we're trying to rush something.
No,
we
don't.
17.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So you need a motion to that effect? Is that correct? Or no?
I don't know that we require a motion.
To continue
to
us
that date.
Set
date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's my motion.
Second.
Aye. Supervisor Hell?
Aye.
Supervisor Copsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep. Okay, we're going to closed session.